You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 30 July. We've got German GDP year-on-year expected later this morning. Expected 0% versus minus 0.2% previously. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Kamran Mepawane. Strong update from Pan African Resources. It really is the little gold miner that really can. We've got John Reid from the World Gold Council, their Q2 report. Central banks still buying, but it seems to have slowed. Renzo Mkanzi, he's head of interest rate process at Future Growth Asset Management. Local bond action since the elections. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb: shakedowns and construction mafia. 5 years, more than 700 arrests. Secrecy the biggest challenge around extortion, says Deputy Police Minister. Business Day: PPC warns against use of subpar cement in construction. Industry repeatedly asked for generalized tariff protection on imported cement. Morning markets: the US was green, S&P up 0.1%, NASDAQ up 0.2%. In the East, it's mostly red. Sydney's up a tenth, but then Tokyo down 0.9%. Hong Kong off 1.1% and Tencent down 1.1%. Commodities mostly red. Gold, $2,426. Brent is $79.48. Platinum, $9.58. And palladium a little green at $8.87. Rand 1846, Bitcoin 66,500. Top 40 opening call, about 240 points to the red. That is a third of a percent lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Kamran Mepawane, independent analyst. Kamran, appreciate the early morning time. The Pan-African production update. I mean, they really are ticking all the boxes. They've got a decent all-in sustained cost, which will come lower as they open up some new bits. They're increasing production, share trading at all-time highs. I called them the little gold mine. I don't know, they're about 12 or 13 billion rand. That's smallish in the gold world, but they really are delivering on the goods.
Oh, absolutely. It feels like they're doing everything possible correctly, and that's yielding them lots of benefit. I mean, no one's going to frown upon a share price that is up 68%, I think, year to date.
Yeah.
So definitely doing everything right. Look, there have been some issues and inefficiencies, but that hasn't seemed to yielded anything significantly negative for them. So it looks to be only to the upside. They're going to be adding production as well going into this new financial year. And if they keep doing things, as you said, that all-in sustaining cost is going to be, guidance is between 1325 and 1350. Mm-hmm. So they're looking at the upper end of that range. And if you're looking at a current gold price of $2,392 per ounce, I mean, that really is money for jam for them.
Yeah, and that's $1,000 an ounce of profit. And I like your point. I mean, I chatted Cecil with Meryl Pick from Old Mutual last week. And it really is around when you're a price taker, which what miners are, it's about doing what you can do well. And we're seeing this here where management are executing left, right, and center. A lot could go wrong, but they're managing it all. There's been some hiccups, but broadly, they're managing what they can. And that's what you want from your miners.
No, absolutely. I mean, even if you look at their operations, you know, they have some mining that's requiring more efforts, obviously. Mm-hmm. But then they also have the tailings that's coming online. I think it's in October this year, which is a little bit easier to process, etc., than, you know, having to go to an underground mine, for example. So it's those kind of decisions, I think, that's really going to help them. And obviously, They know how to do the processing, and as I said, you know, that costing number is really attractive for them as a miner. So definitely one of the top gold performers this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know preferred by a lot of people. We'll leave it there. Kamran Mepawane, independent analyst. Appreciate the early morning time.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanlib Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with John Reid, World Gold Council. John, appreciate the time. We had the Q2 2024 demand trends report. I mean, some of the standouts, a record $2,338 an ounce, 18% up year on year, 13% up quarter on quarter. And gold demand, notwithstanding those high prices, up 4% year on year. Strongest Q2 in your data that you've got over the many decades.
Absolutely. Look, it's been a good quarter for the gold industry. And we've seen strength coming through from a couple of areas in particular. Central bank purchases, which have been at a very high level since the middle of 2022, mm-hmm. have continued to be really strong. And then we've seen investment, particularly in the over-the-counter market or the sort of secretive purchases that are made bilaterally with the banks. That's a very significant component of gold demand. So, yeah, it's been a good quarter for the gold market.
You mentioned central banks, and certainly, I mean, they're down on perhaps some of the previous quarters, but they're still buying. And I suppose what's perhaps critical for in the banking space or the central banking space, they're not price sensitive, really. This, for them, is more about diversification. It's more around worries about geopolitical risks.
Yes, I would say that they are sensitive to the price, however. Typically, what happens with a central bank, in my experience, is they make a top-down decision to increase their gold holdings, and then the reserve management team put that into operation. And reserve managers are the same as anybody else. They don't want to be seen to be paying the high in the market. So when the price has been on a bit of a tear, like it has done in the second quarter, it's not unusual to see some central banks stand back a little bit and see where the price is going to settle. So I'm not surprised that we did see slightly lower central bank purchases quarter on quarter, even if it was up 6% year on year. I mean, 184 tons of central bank buying in a quarter is a big amount, but they're not completely price insensitive.
Okay, I take your point on that. And I suppose what also then happens is that the prices, which for the last quarter are record, they start to, you know, if you roll a year forward, they start to become the normal, assuming there's no change in the gold price, unlikely. And then they sort of come back in either on weakness or on just a case of, well, the price has stabilized, we'll buy some at these levels.
In the end, I think that's right. I mean, I don't think central banks change their decision about how much they're going to allocate to gold on the basis of where the price is. It might affect the timing of their purchases if they think that gold has run up a lot very quickly. But you're right about the record high prices becoming almost the benchmark, because that's very much how other sectors of the market behave as well. When the gold price goes up rapidly, we see jewelry buyers particularly step back from the market because, again, they don't want to be seen to be paying the high if the price is going to come down again. But one of the themes that we've seen really through the first half of the year, not just the second quarter, is that gold's corrections have been relatively shallow and haven't lasted very long. And that's giving confidence, I think, to buyers who don't want to pay high prices, but they recognize they'd better perhaps get involved in the market sooner rather than later, because there seems to be an upswell of supportive buying around on any correction.
Yeah, and I take the point around price. We did see jewelry demand down 19%, as you say, on that price. But retail investment, I mean, Asian retail investment, and we've seen this coming through, they continue to buy. Even Europe saw some smallish but inflows during April and June. The retail investor, in many ways, less put off by the price, although maybe they were timing some of those small sell-offs you mentioned.
Yeah, and I think we've seen some interesting behavior amongst retail investment, actually through the whole of this year and potentially slightly longer. What we're seeing is emerging market investors in coins and small investment bars have been enthusiastically buying gold. Mm-hmm. At the same time, where we've seen slowdowns and sharp slowdowns in the case of Europe from the more traditional developed market investors in coins and small bars. So that contrast has really come through again in the second quarter. But the interesting thing, and you've highlighted it just there, is that we're beginning to see signs that ETF investors in Western markets, who have been on average modest sellers over the last 3 years, but there are indications, I think, that ETF investors are beginning to return to the market. Probably in the case of Europe, due to, you know, the ECB cutting rates, and then in the States, an anticipation of rate cuts coming pretty soon from the Federal Reserve.
You say Asian, that would include China, because the one thing, we had seen retail investment in China picking up, and that was, you know, my logic went there was, well, the housing market's really in trouble, and the stock market had been doing really poorly. But the stock market's picked up this year, yet they still seem to be in the market quite a lot.
They are. I mean, property is the prime investment asset of choice in China, and that continues to struggle. The equity market hasn't done perhaps as bad as the property market. Mm-hmm. But I think Chinese investors have been very much encouraged, both by the performance of gold, but by the fact that the People's Bank of China continued to buy gold through most of the first half of the year. But then in May and June, reported no increases to its holdings. And as I mentioned before we reported this interview, I'm currently in China at the moment. I'm sitting in a fairly dreary hotel in Shenzhen by the airport. But one of the things that comes through from the conversations that I've had in the last week has been a bit of a slowdown in investment demand in gold. And that might be partly due to the fact that the People's Bank of China is not reporting increases in holdings for the last couple of months. So I've no doubt that Chinese investors will continue to buy good amounts of gold, but it was really strong in the first quarter and at the beginning of the second quarter. Now it's slowed down somewhat.
Gotcha. A quick last one. We also see technology demand continuing to increase, up 11%. This primarily AI. It is small, but it is not insignificant. And it's another trend that seems to have longevity.
Yes, I think so. I mean, it's important to remember that gold's technology or industrial demand is a small component of demand, sort of about 7% of total demand. And that demand's been pretty stable, to be frank, over the last couple of decades. Even as gold's use in electronics has continued to grow, the companies are getting better at making chips smaller and using less gold in them. So it's a bit of a, you know, a bit of a trade-off. More chips, smaller chips, less gold per chip, but still really important. What we're seeing now, though, and we're hearing this repeatedly from our conversations with industry, is that the use of gold in electronics is growing, partly because of the chips that are being made for artificial intelligence, but partly because everybody is going to have to upgrade their smartphones, their laptops, everything really that's connected to the internet to take advantage of this AI boom should it materialize. So there's a good possibility that we'll see a few years of relatively strong growth in technology demand as people are forced into upgrading all the electronic devices in their houses and their offices. Look, it's not going to turn gold into an industrial precious metal like palladium.
Yeah.
But it's certainly going to help at the margin, that's for sure.
Yeah. And of course, there's all that pull forward tech demand we saw in the pandemic, which is now all being replaced at the same time. John Reid, World Gold Council, always appreciate the insights.
And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Another good quarterly gold report, even as, you know, interest rates are potentially coming down, which should be maybe bearish for gold. But at this point, certainly not at all. What's your take? Bullish on gold? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money can do more when it's investing with conviction. Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to in-depth, broad market research and high-return investment strategies. So invest in a select set of companies with long-term structural growth potential with StanLib's Global Growth Fund. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Renzo McKenzie, Head of Interest Rate Process at Future Growth Asset Management. Renzo, I appreciate the time. We are about a month into our Government of National Unity. I chatted with you just as it was sort of being formed. And a recent note you put out had a really great line around how cooperative government is generally viewed with optimism, but the complexities inherent in cooperation also can create investor uncertainty. It is a two-sided coin, to throw out a cliche. So far, so good, but there's a long way to go.
Yeah, that's certainly true, Simon. I think so far, so good. Markets have definitely been buoyed by the GNU and the potential it offers for reform and growth ultimately domestically. But we have highlighted in that note, and as many would know, ideologically, the GNU partners are fairly far from each other. And it potentially does present complexities in terms of how they seek to address the many known challenges domestically. So while it's initially buoyed, we do highlight the caution that things might be tricky from here on in terms of actually getting things done, unlocking the growth that the GNU partners and we'd all want for the domestic economy.
Yeah, I want to come to that in a moment. What we have seen is a local bond market that has, I mean, it's responded positively. It started responding shortly after the election and has continued through July with government yields coming down.
It certainly has, leading into the elections. And I guess the general story for the past couple of years has been South African domestic bonds show great value, but the struggle at times has been, of course, unlocking that value and seeing sustainably lower yields. The GNU, perhaps against expectation, or the electoral outcome rather, perhaps against expectation, definitely helped price out some of that premium in domestic bonds. So just for levels, we saw your domestic bonds, your long bonds pricing towards 13% pre-election. We're now seeing those bonds at about 11.50. Of course, given the inverse relationship between bond yield and price, as far as appreciation in those instruments, there certainly has been considerable appreciation for investors in those instruments in recent months.
And we've made this point before when I've been chatting with you. 1.5% move in a long-dated bond, that is a big move, even if it started at an elevated 13%.
It certainly is a big move. Those long-dated bond coupon rates are anywhere near about 10-odd%. Mm-hmm. And that's some indication of the return you'd expect of these instruments if held to maturity. But the return we've seen in the past 12 months, and a lot of that coming from the post-GNU period, those long-dated bonds have returned in the order of 15, 16, 17-odd% in the past year. So significant capital appreciation realized in those bonds in the past year. And a lot of that has to do with the GNU and I guess the market's favor for that GNU in the past couple of months.
Absolutely. You said a moment ago, sort of the hard work now starts. I mean, there's always risks inherent in a government of national unity. We get that. But investors, you know, sort of like the easy stuff has now been done, and now it's the fundamental outlook that matters. And a lot of that is infrastructure reform.
We need to see significant investment in infrastructure, and that will roll up into aggregate macroeconomic growth. But we definitely do need to start seeing the benefits of investment in infrastructure domestically. I think the conversation is definitely positive in terms of the initial indications from the GNU and the ministers involved there. We do now need to see the fruits of some of the talk and some of these efforts. And I guess that's the challenge domestically, is a lot of good plans, but the execution domestically has not been fantastic. And we do need to see a turn as far as that's concerned in the next couple of months.
I take your point. The plans are, with respect to the politicians, the easy part. It's actually the process of it. And I imagine we've been talking government bonds here, and infrastructure is first and foremost a government responsibility, but I suspect we're going to see a lot of public-private partnership and even just perhaps, you know, it's sort of totally private infrastructure funds come into the space as well.
I think Ramaphosa administration in the last electoral cycle definitely opened up that door. I think there's great acceptance of private participation in infrastructure investment. We've definitely seen a lot of that as far as Eskom's concerned. Operation Vulindlela has been very useful, I think, in unlocking that private sector investment. We'd expect more of the same as far as electricity is concerned, and the Minister of Electricity has alluded to as much in recent speech. But we'd also expect to see that extended support to rail and general logistics infrastructure. It's definitely been an area of challenge domestically in recent years. It's certainly constrained domestic growth, and I think it's certainly an avenue where we can get increased private sector participation, increased collaboration between government and the private sector, and certainly an avenue that can help unlock domestic growth. We saw definitely post-COVID the constraints to logistics and general rail infrastructure and our inability to meaningfully profit from increased commodity prices post-COVID. And we hope that in the next super commodity cycle, whenever that might be, certainly in the next couple of years, just generally, that increased investment in that space will help unlock domestic growth, Sam.
Yeah, 100%. And we are seeing some green shoots. The Sasol trading update earlier in the week certainly suggested that. We'll leave it there. Renzo Mkhonzi, Head of Interest Rate Process at Future Growth Asset Management. Always appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Mark Ngubi from Anchor yesterday, talking around nuclear power broadly, investment opportunities into uranium. We asked if you were investing into nuclear. Almost half of you said you weren't sure how. A third said some yes, some great opportunity. The rest said not for you. If you don't know how, listen to the interview. There were some great ideas in there. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nebuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests, for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us an awesome rating and a review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow. Fees.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.